Welcome on to a special mailbag edition of the Dunked On Basketball Podcast, brought to you today by the Postmates app. Danny is on vacation, so joining us instead from the great state of Alaska, Seth Partnow. Seth, what's up?
How's it going?
Quite well, quite well. We got some awesome questions today to go through in the mailbag, including one that is near and dear to your heart, but I will save that one until the end. Let's get right to it. How's my Marv, by the way? Is it good, or does it need some work?
Your Marv, is that supposed to be your Marv?
Yeah. Yeah, they'll say that sometimes, like when LeBron James getting right to it.
Okay, that was better than before. I could tell you were doing Marv earlier. game show announcer guy.
All right, let's actually get right to it. This is from Ethan Richardson. Considering the current crop of available players, now with Anthony Davis being out, what do you guys think Team USA's most deadly lineup could be, i.e. your ideal closing five in the hypothetical tight game for the gold?
That's a interesting question. It's almost tempting to just say the Golden State death lineup, right? But I think that we can probably, as good as that lineup has been, we probably can do better replacing, I don't know, Harrison Barnes with perhaps a lightly used LeBron James and maybe even Andre Iguodala with a young Kawhi Leonard or something like that. But
yeah, no, that would be fantastic. That's what I thought too. Yeah. Steph, Clay, LeBron, Kawhi, and Draymond. Although, you know, KD would also be available. I mean, I think I like Clay because I think he's a little bit better defender than Durant is. Clay is someone who can just stand in the corner. Is probably even a little bit better of just a straight-up spot-up shooter than KD, although they're obviously both really close in that, and KD has dominated in that role in the 2012 Olympics for USA. Steph obviously has to be out there. Draymond, you need, is kind of the guy who can actually be a center, but they can still switch everything. Maybe my one potential change there would be KD instead of LeBron, just because LeBron is struggling to shoot the ball these days.
I think you could make an argument for KD over anyone but Steph, in a lineup that would work. You know, you put KD in that Clay spot in the corner, and he does everything Clay does, and he's also Kevin Durant. So I think that's you maybe lose a touch defensively there against smaller teams, but that just seems so overwhelming offensively that basically, like I said, replacing anyone but Curry with him. And also, I mean, from a physically overwhelming standpoint, it's worth discussing whether you put Russell Westbrook on there somewhere.
I don't think so, because I just think on this team, a team that's going to score probably, you know, 1.2 points per possession, that Westbrook, I don't think that his efficiency can ramp up in the way that the other guys, because he's not going to be able to finish plays that others are creating as well as some of these other guys can. And what do you think about Draymond versus a more traditional center?
You know, the main thing that you typically give up going small is getting beat by, you know, opposing big men defensively, but that's not a problem that Draymond has had really even at the NBA level. And just trying to think of who the international centers are that, you know, would be the type to give him problems, and I'm hard pressed to think of one. I mean, maybe, yeah, you know, maybe Powell 6 or 7 years ago.
But yeah, I mean, that's one of the things, right, is that the international competition is not as good to me as it was a bit ago.
Oh, there's certainly, I think the perimeter game has probably as good as it's ever been. I think that where the international game is probably lacking is kind of the athletic, offensively skilled big men, where they just, you know, there are some that are one and some that are the other, but I don't think there are any who are competitive really on both ends at kind of the Team USA level. You know, Rudy Gobert can do some things defensively, but you have to, what can he do to you offensively with that team that makes you not just say, all right, we're going to go small and spread them out.
Yeah, and those teams are not going to have the ability, with a few small exceptions, if you're just switching on them, to take you one-on-one from the perimeter. And I think that these Team USA has enough length and versatility in that lineup to where even if you can get a big man onto a smaller guy, that they can just double-team and recover back, especially with the three-point line being shorter than it is in the NBA. I think that this year, depending on if there are more injuries and dropouts, but I would say that Team USA is probably the biggest favorite that they have been this year, really since 2008.
I think that's probably right, and I think we're both kind of agreeing here that it's just that dearth at the kind of the bigger positions that would force Team USA away from kind of the extreme advantage it has kind of with these smaller and mid-sized players.
Well, and just Spain has declined.
Yeah.
There aren't all their good players. Most of them are on the downside. I mean, guys like Juan Carlos Navarro, who had killed the U.S. at times, Rudy Fernandez, the Gasol brothers, even someone like Felipe Reyes, Jose Garbajosa, obviously, is long in the rearview mirror now. And Spain has not really found guys to replace them. And then Argentina is probably even worse off. You know, they're going to be in the Olympics. They had a heroic performance at Tournament of the Americas last year, and Manu is going to play, but they're just so old now that there's just no way that those guys can keep up. There hasn't been, you know, another generation after that golden generation for them. All right, what do we got as our next question here?
It's from Jacob Belgium. Sorry if I'm mispronouncing that. We do that from time to time on this mailbag, so I've heard. Just on listening to the Top 10 Players podcast, is there a precedent for a team having two of the league's top five players and having a less than 10% chance of winning the title, such as OKC this year? He says, I found myself thinking that it's almost impossible, and especially in a 30-team format. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I agree with you, Jacob. It does seem pretty difficult. I mean, the number of times, even in NBA history, that there have been two of the league's top five players on the same team is pretty limited. I was only able to come up with a few examples. Michael Jordan and Scottie Pippen might be one, although even Scottie, looking at contemporary feeling, probably was not ever a time where he was universally considered a top five player in the league. Maybe in 1994, when Jordan was out, you could point to that. Kobe and Shaq, definitely. Magic and Kareem, there was probably a time that they were pretty close, although by the time Magic really came into his own, Kareem probably was not at that level anymore, but you make the argument. Maybe Bird and McHale, although McHale, I don't know if he was ever considered that level. Dr. J and Moses, maybe just for like 1 year in 1983. And then Jerry West and Elgin Baylor, and I can't really think, and maybe Jerry West and Wilt as well in those late 60s, early 70s teams, but other than that, I can't think of it. Did any other potential ones come to mind?
No, I think the West and Baylor combo is a good, almost a good analogy to the present day where those two are great. And then you match up with, you know, the top team of the day in the Lakers of those days case, it's the Celtics. And it's like, all right, maybe spots one and two were good. We're competitive. We may even have an advantage, but then, you know, the other spots three through eight or nine in the rotation, just giving up so much that doesn't matter. And even if we expand the definition a little bit, I think that, you know, top five is arbitrary. I think, you know, the way you did it in the top 10 is tiers. And I think that's probably a better way of thinking about it, is having, you know, two of the shortlist guys, whether there's four guys in the league right now or eight, and it, you know, varies from year to year. But that doesn't change the question terribly, I think. And I think that just the rarity of it and how, I don't want to say non-competitive, but how long shot they are this year, kind of speaks to some of the problems they've had building around them. I know that, that Jared Dubin and I have talked about this all year. I know you and Danny have talked about this all year. Just, you know, what else do they have besides that top, you know, three and a half players? If you're going to throw, you know, Steven Adams in as kind of a frontline starter alongside, you know, Russ, KD, and Ibaka.
Well, it's a twofold problem. Number one is I think that they have underachieved in what they've put around those guys, but also just that the Warriors and Spurs are so unbelievable this year. You know, if this were a normal year and you just had the best team in the league was winning 61 games or something, they're on track for 56. You know, you could say they probably had a 20% chance at the title. And I would say that all those other combos I pointed out are ones that, you know, I don't think any of those teams you would have ever said going into a season that they had less than a 20% chance of winning a title. So I think that's their other problem. The only other example that I think is the closest, definitely not two top five guys, but is the closest to me, is some of the recent vintage Clippers with Chris Paul and Blake Griffin.
Yeah, that's. I think that's a good analogy, and almost a similar drawback. Even though the Clippers' starting lineup or top probably four guys, throwing in DeAndre Jordan and J.J. Redick in there, have been right there. It's a similar problem with everyone else in the rotation. It just isn't necessarily reliable in their system at the top level. And it's a good analogy because those are two teams that have kind of, I don't want to say wasted an opportunity, but certainly haven't done everything they can to take away to capitalize on it. I think this was last night was thrown into, you know, kind of stark relief a little bit where our old friend Josh Huestis scored his first NBA points for the Thunder, and that's almost emblematic of their kind of failures to add those other pieces. You know, let's say you use a late first round pick may probably doesn't have a great chance of being a super impact player, but you pick up a rotation guy there. It's helpful. Instead, you get cute and draft and stash a D-League guy who barely plays even into his second year, and you know, that doesn't look great right now.
No, it doesn't. Now, in fairness, the system used to be different. There used to be a lot more dumber teams. Some of these teams, West and Baylor, even their supporting cast wasn't that terrible. Dr. J. Moses, that team was loaded. Bird, Mikhail, Magic, Kareem, those teams were loaded. And even when the Lakers had Kobe and Shaq under a system that was less punitive from a luxury tax standpoint, by 2003, really, the cupboard was nearly entirely bare around those guys. I mean, I remember John Hollinger writing back then for like Sports Illustrated, whoever he was writing for, that killing Mitch Kupchak for not putting enough around them in 2003 when they lost to the Spurs. And then the only reason they were able to get good again in 2004 is because Malone and Payton went for such a deep discount. So it may be
Malone, yeah.
this is a relatively unprecedented situation. I don't think that we will see something like this again. Whether that is because one of those two guys will leave Oklahoma City is difficult to say yet. All right, we have a new sponsor, Postmates. I mentioned before that the way I've been trying to get sponsors is taking services that I already use and really enjoyed, thinking that I would be an excellent spokesperson for them, and Postmates has responded. Postmates basically is an app that enables anyone to get anything delivered under 1 hour in all major U.S. cities. And they can deliver from anywhere. So if you want to get Chipotle, you want to get Walgreens, McDonald's, 7-Eleven, whatever it is, we always use it on football Sundays when we're hanging out. In fact, all of our stupid football bets are the stakes are that the person who loses has to buy Postmates for that day. Pretty much any major restaurant. And the best thing is, Postmates deliveries are only $3.99 for the best restaurants. And the even more best thing is that if you download the Postmates app on iTunes or Android and enter that familiar CapSpace code, all one word, you get a free first delivery. It's basically a $10 credit that'll cover that first delivery. And remember to enter that CapSpace code. The Postmates app will revolutionize the way that you get stuff delivered. All right, here's another one. Matthew Smith. There's been lots of talk about around the Warriors and Durant. Let's say he stays in OKC instead. Can you see the Warriors taking a similar strategy, i.e. kind of stripping the books a little bit, to get Horford and Batum or anyone else who is on the market?
Do you? Is that a possible strategy? Sure. The arguments against kind of going, I think the arguments against going after Kevin Durant are, you know, the kind of the continuity, we know we're great now kind of stuff. I think those kind of pale in comparison to, well, you're getting Kevin Durant, so figure it out. I think,
yeah,
you know,
but Al Horford, yeah, and Nick Batum pale in comparison, yeah, to continuity for one of the greatest, yeah, teams ever, to me.
Yeah, and though, I mean, to be honest, Horford actually is a better idea almost, just because Bogut is getting up there, and he's, you know, always been a guy who's picked up little knocks here and there. Azili has been good when healthy, but, you know, is he even going to play again a meaningful role this year? And Horford is, from a skill and style standpoint, certainly fits in well with what they want to do on both sides of the ball. So that makes a sense as sort of a retooling. Whether it makes sense to kind of empty the cupboard to do that, That's a good question. I mean, at the same time, if you're a team that adds Al Horford and still becomes a dynasty, then kind of picking up those spare parts might be a little easier just because, you know, guys might take the David West deal and you know, come for a year or two on small money because it's such a great environment. But, I mean, that's a big gamble to take.
The other issue is the opportunity cost. Well, number one is the players that you're losing, I guess. Yeah. There's two issues. One is the players, like, for example, Sean Livingston has $3 million guaranteed out of his $5.7 million. Now, they could probably just trade him away for nothing. They wouldn't have to eat that $3 million. But then who's going to play backup point guard for you? And now you're Livingston is a big part of what they can do with their versatility in the playoffs, playing alongside Steph, or his defensive ability allowing them to still switch when Steph is out of the game. That's really important. But now, I think even, would you rather have Iguodala and Bogut or Al Horford making the same money? So that's part two, is signing Nick Batum or Al Horford to a $25 million max contract. That's probably a bad contract. Bogut and Iguodala making $12 million, those are totally okay contracts. And those contracts expire in 2017, and that the expiry of those contracts is what they're going to use to have more flexibility. That actually is really, especially with Steph's small cap hold, 2017 is really the bigger time that I expect them to really retool if they don't get Durant. So now if you're going to sign Horford or Batum, you're giving up on signing anyone really in 2017, or you would have to move a lot more pieces around. So I really do not see them doing that. If they don't get KD, I expect to see relatively minor changes from them. All right, what do we have next?
I just want to finish up on that. This isn't part of the question, but
so what we have next is you finishing up on that. Good.
No, I kind of wanted to ask is what if they do if they don't get KD, what do they do with Harrison Barnes? That's the big question that's out there, right?
Just match. They'll just match. Worst case scenario, they can just dump him and attach an asset to him, a future first rounder in 2017, the worst case. But I mean, they wouldn't have a way to replace him. I think even if he gets maxed out, I would just match him personally. Yeah, the only argument to me against it is kind of messing up the locker room because he's making too much money. But I think that is of much less salience than simply, what he's worth actually being on the team.
And again, the opportunity cost of not really being able to replace him.
Right.
All right.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's what I think is would be their thinking.
Sure. All right. Moving on. Jonathan Deans asks, can you make your best starting five out of players who predominantly come off the bench for their respective teams? They'd be interested in how you think this imaginary group would fare against other starters in the league. It's an interesting exercise. I think just kind of looking at the names, it would be probably a 30-win team. We've kind of listed some point guard.
Are we assuming that they have just like an average bench basically behind these guys?
Yeah. I think that we've listed some players like point guard would be Dennis Schroeder, Mark.
Well, yeah. So let's do it. We'll list the guys, then we'll just pick a guy, whoever we think would be the best from each position, and then once we pick our teams, we'll kind of see where we think they would end up.
All right. So, and you did some of the legwork on this, but I'll read them off and pretend that I'm pulling this off the top of my head. But point guard is actually pretty deep. I mean, there's got Dennis Schroeder, Marcus Smart, Jeremy Lin, Michael Carter Williams, Darren Collison, Corey Joseph, Sean Livingston, Patty Mills, who you don't have listed here is another name.
That'd be a good one.
Depending on who is coming off the bench on any given day in Orlando, might be someone to look at there. There's some decent-ish players there.
Who do you like the best out of those guys?
I've always kind of been a Dennis Schroeder guy, so that's probably where I'd go. Depending on kind of what else you come up with at other positions, maybe Marcus Smart. Those are the two that as starters jump out at me. I think Jeremy Lin has certainly proven himself to be a useful player, but I think more of a change of pace, scoring point guard rather than a guy you want to be, trotting out for 32 minutes.
Yeah, I could see that. Would you, now I'm not sure if he can play this many minutes anymore, what would you think of using Sean Livingston? Your defense would be good. Like, you could switch a lot, which would be nice. But obviously he doesn't have the shooting range. I mean, I think you would have to construct the rest of the team around him. I'm not sure whether he can run a pick and roll anymore either. it wouldn't surprise me if he kind of can't. But yeah, I think, and Smart obviously would be awesome defensively. I don't know if he can run a pick and roll yet at an NBA level either. Darren Collison would be totally fine. You know, he's been an average starter, at times in his career, rare times.
we count Zach LaVine as a backup point guard here, or now that he's kind of started?
No, we can. I mean, I kind of shied away from some of these younger guys who are like not, playing off the bench at times, but are like kind of really starters. Like you mentioned the Orlando guys, I didn't really choose like Alfred Payton because, he's really a starter. Like this, him playing behind Brandon Jennings off the bench is ridiculous. But, yeah, all right. So I'm going to go with Sean Livingston. Who would be your pick? Schroeder?
Schroeder, yeah.
All right. Shooting guard, the guys I had, Alec Burks. I mean, we could throw all these wings in there too. Why don't we just do that?
Yeah.
Burks, Crawford, Gerald Henderson, Alan Crabb, Manu Ginobili, Andre Iguodala, Justice Winslow, Doug McDermott.
Does Omri Caspi count as a wing, or is he a small ball?
He's starting, isn't he?
I think he's been coming off the bench for...
Oh, yeah, I guess Quincy AC has been starting recently. But, yeah, Caspi has started most of the year. I mean, I think when a guy is sort of not either clearly in a bench role or is, like, kind of one of the top five best guys on the team and just hasn't been starting recently or something, I kind of didn't include him. But, yeah, I mean, I guess he technically would count.
Well, then that would disqualify Andre then, wouldn't it? since
Yeah, well, but he's clearly coming off the bench. He comes off the bench every single game, is what I'm saying. Like, he's not just sort of like, oh, we're taking him out of the starting lineup these last 10 games or something.
Evan Turner, another name to throw in there, who's had a...
Not for me, but you can go ahead and do that.
I've never been an Evan Turner guy, but he's been legitimately useful player for Boston this year.
Yeah, I would rather have a bunch of these other guys beside him, but
fair enough. Jeremy Lamb
still not quite in the same class as some of these other guys, I would say.
Tobias Harris count as a bench player now in Detroit?
Well, no, he's starting.
Are they starting?
He and Morris are starting together at Ford. All right. So I think very clearly, I think both of us would agree that Andre Iguodala would be one of the two guys, right?
Yeah. And then
we probably need some more shooting.
Yeah. So I'm thinking Manu maybe is the other name.
We'll kind of suspend disbelief and pretend that these guys can all play starters minutes, I guess.
It's kind of interesting how kind of few, I'm just surprised looking at this list of how kind of few shooters off the bench there are in the wing position. That kind of speaks to, the difficulty of, we're always talking about, they just need to get like that wing shooter off the bench, and just like how actually few of those guys there seem to be right now.
Well, we're actually like good in the other, I mean, plenty of like Jody Meeks.
Yeah.
Wayne Ellington, although he's starting, like those type of guys who are pretty one-dimensional that I didn't include just because they're like not good enough players, right? Essentially.
Actually, a guy who's a name I'll throw out there who probably wouldn't fit with this team, but I've been banging the drum that I think he would be a sneaky good bench player on a good team is Shabazz Muhammad. He's obviously not there on the Timberwolves and not a guy you'd want to toss out in a starting role for a mediocre-ish team, as this one is probably shaping up to be.
I think this is foreshadowing a little bit. I think I could make a 40-win team.
Okay.
Assuming we had an average bench. I think you could get enough pieces to kind of fit together. All right, yeah. So who do you like besides Andre out of that group?
Manu, I like Alec Burks. Those are the two. The guy, like, needs shooting, but McDermott, like, that's all he does. I mean, he's become a little bit more of a scorer than just a shooter this year, but the defense is still a problem, and Crawford is his own thing.
Crawford is not really in the discussion to me. I think with Andre, probably Manu and Andre are the two best players out of this group overall, I think. So you would probably have to go with them. You might go in a different direction, but those would be my two picks, and probably the biggest guy who, especially if I wanted to go with Livingston, which I guess I did, then maybe McDermott I might consider, and we'll just try to get some more defense around him just because he has been like pretty money for three. And Gerald Henderson is the other guy that I kind of considered but I think Andre is just kind of a better version of him.
Sure.
I guess Manu and Andre, that's gotta be it for me.
I think so.
All right, so power forward, Ryan Anderson, Nikola Mirotic, Kelly Olynyk were the three that really jumped out to me.
Yeah, that's not a murderer's row just now. You maybe throw some other kind of stretchy four types off the bench, but like, that are coming off the bench for teams now. But that seems to be like if we're talking like the better backup fours. That's who they seem to be, unless you're going to go with a smaller energy guy like a Trevor Booker or something like that.
Or you could play Justice Winslow at the four, too. That might be another potential option. I think Kelly Olynyk is really good, and I think that Mirotić, it's kind of been a lost year for him. I'm still more of a believer in him than some of these other guys. Ryan Anderson is too one-dimensional, I think. But Olynyk, actually, I think, is a better defensive player than he's given credit for. And depending on what you want to do, you could go with both Mirotić and Olynyk at the big positions. I would say Kelly Olynyk is probably clearly the best player of the three that I named, unless you had someone else you wanted to throw in.
No, I think that's right.
Kelly might be the best big man on the Celtics.
Probably is.
That's a 50-win team when they're healthy.
Him and Amir Johnson, probably, but Olynyk can play more minutes, so probably give it to Olynyk.
And his spacing, I think, is obviously something that really helps a lot. All right, center. I had Enes Kanter, Miles Plumlee, John Henson, Clint Capella, Channing Frye, Tristan Thompson, who was kind of off the bench. He was fudging a little bit to get him in here, and then Al Jefferson.
One more name I'd add there is Bismack Biyombo.
Oh yeah,
and
he actually might be he might actually be the one that I would.
Yeah, and I'm adding him because he's the guy I'd pick.
That was an oversight. All right, he's my center, I think.
Actually, and just thinking of the Raptors, what do we throw a guy like Terrence Ross in with the wings, or he hasn't?
Patrick Patterson should be in the power forward conversation. Sure. I still like Olynyk, I think, better than Patterson, but he should have been mentioned.
Since the start of 2016, especially, Patterson's been really good for the Raptors, who are sneakily being really good against everybody. Recent loss to the Celtics notwithstanding.
All right, so it sounds like basically our team here. You have I have Sean Livingston at point guard. You have Schroeder, Manu, and Andre on the wing. Kelly Olynyk at power forward, and Bismack Biyombo at center. I think that is with an average bench. I think that is a 40-win team easily.
I think mid-low 30s.
The defense is going to be good. That's an above average defense right there.
Yeah,
with Biyombo and Andre and Sean Livingston, that's like three very good positions. And Kelly Olynyk, I think, he looks like a slow white guy. He's actually a slightly quicker white guy, and his defensive numbers really have not been terrible. I think, like, other than the fact that he kind of looks a little goofy, you would have a hard time saying that he's like some terrible defender, and even Manu is fine.
You'd maybe be in the battle for that kind of that 7th-8th seed fodder kind of position in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah, I think that seems like, we would probably struggle to score a little bit, but I think the spacing with Olynyk would really help with that. Manu is still really good. If you wanted to go with, like, that's the biggest argument for going with, like, Olynyk. I mean, the biggest problem is at point guard, you don't really have any players who are well-rounded. So I figured, like, going with Livingston and we'll just stop people. That was sort of my thought. But
I think that it's funny just describing this team as, like, especially considering the age of especially the wing players. It's like we're describing the team that is like, when the tanking discussion gets brought up, is like, well, would you rather be them or have a chance of being better going forward afterwards? It's very much kind of the mediocrity treadmill starting lineup. You know what I mean?
No, that's totally right. And you just have to make some choices with these guys, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there are very few of these guys, maybe Andre, but even he is limited offensively. You're just Olynyk is okay on defense, more of an offensive guy. Biyombo, obviously, all defense. Kanter is all offense. I mean, that's the thing with these guys, and that's why a lot of them come off the bench, is just because they are not totally well-rounded players. But I think if you cherry-picked some good defensive players and some good offensive players that you could get your way into being passable. I mean, this is probably that starting lineup is probably, you know, like the 22nd best offense, but I think you could be like the 10th best defense or something with that team.
Sure. That's, you know, that's probably a, you put it that way, you're talking about a 38 win team, which, you know, could in many years battle for the playoffs. So sure.
Yeah. All right. This one's an easy one from Will Foy. He's basically wrote a little bit longer, but he basically complains that TNT and ESPN only show the coach talking to his players using like these generic platitudes, like, and he's basically asking like, why don't the coaches say better stuff to each other, you know, to their team during the timeouts? Like, this has an easy answer.
Yeah, it's they're not allowed to. The stuff that gets shown gets cleared before it gets put on air, and they're not allowed to show actual strategy. And you know, the other part is that a former guest of yours told me a while ago, there's still a lot of time in the timeout. So you got to fill the air with something. And it's not always, you know, you spend 20 seconds. All right, let's the pick and roll a little harder. And then you've got, you know, 2 more minutes of timeout. What do you say? So, I think that's those two things combined to what we get is a lot of the clapping and rah-rah stuff, which I think does the coaches a great disservice, because it makes it seem like they're not actually doing anything.
Yeah, every once in a while they'll show some good stuff. And, I mean, maybe that motivational stuff helps a little bit. It just kind of makes you lock in. But the way I always think about it, and you have even more of a basketball history than I do. I shouldn't say even more, because it's not like mine as much. But, you know, the way I always think about that, and that's probably the same way that Will is, all right, if I'm a player sitting there, what am I thinking? Like, is this actually useful for me to take some thoughts out on the floor and be like, all right, you know, what am I going to concentrate on more? I mean, you know, if you say, all right, we got to rebound better, I think if you're a guard, then you could say, all right, I'm going to go to the glass more or something. You know, that's not like useless type of stuff.
And it's cues that have been primed, you know, in practice and in pregame. And so it's not like, you know, the coach says, you know, something about, you know, making contact on, you know, a rebound or something like that. That's a refresher of a point that you know, if you've been doing like a rebounding drill, like it's a mnemonic almost as much as a specific instruction. So you kind of, you know, we're both lawyers, so you incorporate by reference all that has come before. So it's just, you know, brings that to the fore a little bit, and so you don't have time to do the whole 10-minute spiel on how you, you know, how you box out. You just remember, all right, yes, we do all these things that we worked on now. And that's useful. I think you'd agree with me.
All right, so this is going to be a two-parter. This is an awesome one to finish off part one with, though, one that I think I'm going to really enjoy, at least. This is from Dave Elani Jr. Who is your all-time starting five? He also asked about 12-man roster. That's a little bit too complex. But and for the all-time starting five, he's basically asking, we're playing under today's rules, essentially, and you're just picking guys up in a time machine. I mean, I guess we'll say, the way I always like to conceptualize this is you put them in a time machine, but then they at least have like a summer to sort of get used to like what the game is like, you know, and train a little bit. You know, Jerry West could shoot some threes or something to like something like that. But do you want to go first or should I?
I mean, I think we probably agree on the backcourt. It's pretty easy, I think.
Okay.
I think it's hard pressed to say, you know, especially if we're playing under today's rules, that anyone but Steph is this year is your point guard.
Yeah, he's having the greatest offensive season of all time. I think that would you agree with that assessment right now?
Individual offensive season. That's I don't know. Impactful. Absolutely. Just because so much of what they do is just predicated on the threat of him, you know, hitting a silly pull-up jump shot at a pull-up three at any point in time. And that's just the mental strain as much as kind of the physical pulling people around the court that puts on a defense is just so tough to deal with that puts everyone else in good positions to succeed. So you're kind of starting with, you know, like a Mario Kart, like mushroom boost. but just by having him on the floor.
So that was one of my ones. The other one, I picked 1991 for Jordan. Is that the Jordan season that you would have gone with?
I mean, maybe you go with, was it 88? He won, MVP and Defensive Player of the Year.
He had 35 points a game that year. Actually the year after that, he had like 33 points and 8 rebounds, 8 assists when he was playing point guard a lot of the time. The reason I think he actually was a better player during those times, the reason that I didn't go with those seasons and instead went with 91 is because I think that he would just fit a little bit better into our team concept in 91, have a little bit better of a jumper. Still, you know, 27, I think he was 28 when they finally won the title, so still pretty close to his peak athleticism. Not quite the level where he was just dunking all over guys as badly, but still that Patrick Ewing dunk on the baseline was still from 91, so he's still pretty good at that, but also just a little bit better jumper, a little bit better understanding of the team concept, having played in the triangle for 2 years under Phil Jackson. That's why I went with 91, but you know, any of those seasons from 88 to 91, I think you could be very happy with.
Sure. I think, and we start to get into the front court, and that's where I think we might disagree some. I'm going to go out of left field and say it's small forward. I might put a Showtime Magic season in there.
Interesting. Magic can't guard anybody, though.
But we've got three others.
And he also, if he doesn't have the ball in his hands, he's useless. Now, I mean, not to denigrate Magic. Magic was awesome. I just, when we did the all-time NBA rank, he was actually number four on my list. I mean, if he's the greatest passer of all time. But I think, you know, I mean, maybe like by 91, he could hit standstill threes, but really it wasn't until recently. But it, I mean, I like that pick in some ways, but in other ways, I feel like he doesn't fit in that well to the team concept, which is kind of funny when you think of a guy who's the greatest passer ever. He's not that versatile.
Sure. No, but let me just one kind, like imagine a 1-3 pick and roll with Steph and Magic.
Magic didn't even really run pick and roll that much, though.
But do you think that he couldn't figure out how to be the screener in a pick and roll with Steph Curry?
No, I'm sure he could. I mean, but it's just to me, it's a little easier to have guys who are baked into the modern game a little bit more. I think if you're gonna have Magic on the team, I think he needs to be the point guard.
Fair enough, but
I'm not like trying to usurp your team. Sure, you can argue with my team too. My small forward was 2013. I guess actually it's small forward. I'd probably go Kevin Durant 2014. Just his shooting is so good. The length to switch, pretty good rebounder. I'm going to go small, obviously, because that's just what we do here. But and especially for today's game, today's rules, and just a guy who, I mean, I need guys who can work without the ball in their hands. And are good enough shooters that they're not going to kill the offense and can be helped off, or we have to give it to him every time. And KD, especially if you leave him, he can just shoot right over the help defense. I mean, I'm imagining him playing a similar role to what he played on that 2012 Olympic team.
Sure. Although, I mean, if you're going to ding me for Magic needing to have the ball, I have to point out that, you know, so much of that season from KD is Russ being out and him just doing everything with the ball in his hands. And if you're taking him off the ball, you're losing some of that, even though, you know, the shooting obviously was great. It's just you don't quite get all of that if your offense is predicated on Steph having the ball. At the same time, though, the same thing that I, you know, that I called for with Steph Magic pick and roll, a Steph KD pick and roll, or pick and pop more likely, wouldn't be a lot of fun to guard, I don't think.
No, just seeing KD the way he played on the 2012 Olympic team is a big part of what kind of informed that pick for me. Who else did you consider? Anyone else besides Magic for your small forward?
I mean, I thought about LeBron. I thought about KD. I'm getting ahead of myself. I'm actually going with LeBron at power forward anyway.
Yeah, so am I. What was your LeBron season?
I think it would be probably 2012. Just because I think that was his peak as a kind of a two-way player. I think that was probably his best defensive season, or one of them, or certainly his best combination of offense and defense. When that kind of that turbocharged kind of heat jump and trap and press a team, and was also I believe that was one of his better shooting years. Does that get?
Yeah, that was the big thing. That's why I didn't. I mean, I think he was probably actually a more valuable player in like 2009 for an average team, but on this team when he's going to be playing off the ball more. And also when he's maybe a little bit better defensively, I thought like 2013 was the year, maybe 2012. Those 2 years are pretty much kind of indistinguishable. I guess I'd go 13. He was probably a little bit better offensively.
Sure, but I think we're kind of in agreement there. And I think that having him there kind of take some of the heat off of Magic for his, you know, in matchups where your power forward needs to do a little bit less defensively, Magic can slide there pretty easily. And if he, so, and let LeBron, you know, chase guys around the perimeter. And if you need, more of a paint presence, then LeBron could, you know, peak athletic LeBron did that pretty well too. So, that, you know, that allows the versatility to kind of, get away with what shortcomings there are for Magic for me.
So the center position was by far the toughest for me. I actually didn't really struggle too hard with my first four. I went with Tim Duncan in 2003. Yes, I am aware that he was not listed as a center then, but he was plenty big to play center, especially in the modern game. Just so good defensively. I mean, that's the number one thing that I'm looking for from a center, and probably a little more mobile than maybe, you know, Shaq from 2000 or something like that. Like, I considered Shaq from 2000, but just I think that him, he could be attacked defensively in the pick and roll, and I don't want my team to really have any defensive weaknesses. That's kind of why I went for Duncan, and we don't need as much scoring as we did. And Duncan probably also, you know, I think was maybe a little bit better a passer than Shaq too. But who did you go with as your center?
I was tempted by Duncan, but just in the interest of being different, I think about 2008 or 2009, Dwight Howard.
Interesting thought. Are you worried at all about the free throw issue? Because this team is going to be such a monster offensively that packing him might actually be like a good strategy just from like an expected value standpoint.
Well, then we get to set our defense down every time down the floor. Go ahead and hack. Go ahead and foul all your alien guys out and we'll play against our set defense every time down the floor and we'll go with it. I think.
Who do you think is a better defensive player? Like 2009 or whatever it was, Dwight Howard, or 2003, Tim Duncan?
I think in the modernist game, I think that I can make a pretty compelling argument that Howard's versatility, both at the rim and kind of mobility on the perimeter, in an environment where you're not allowed to put hands on ball handlers as much, maybe gives him a little bit of an edge.
Yeah, the one thing I don't like about Dwight is that I don't think that he has the intelligence and the passing that Duncan had. Duncan is also an unbelievable pick and roll screener. Dwight was pretty good, but he's not the level of Duncan. I like that Dwight, though, because the one aspect that he provides that Duncan doesn't is getting alley-oops on the pick and roll, which could suck guys in more for additional gravity. That could be helpful.
And that's almost exactly what I was thinking. It's just kind of providing that vertical spacing that we like to talk about. And then just like I said, the mobility on perimeter defending pick and roll, as well as being able to protect the rim. And I think that, you know, his, you know, part of this is me being contrarian, as I like to do from time to time. And the fact that, you know, his reputation is so at such an nadir right now, that just to remind, this guy was really good and really good on both sides.
Oh yeah. I like this pick, actually. I'm kind of jealous of this pick.
Well, good. I'm glad.
because Dwight could switch too, you know, probably better than even than the Tim Duncan of that era could as well. Although, I mean, he was definitely very quick for a center, you know, in that time period, but not quite to the level of Dwight. Did you consider any of like the 90s or 80s or even, you know, Wilt Chamberlain? Do you consider any of those guys?
I honestly, the lingering Boston Homer in me considered Bill Russell, but I rejected that. I mean, it's honestly like if you took Bill Russell's kind of physical abilities and transported them in today, I think Dwight Howard is probably a reasonable facsimile of the kind of player he'd have turned into.
And just the same type of teammate and winner, too.
Well, how dare you?
but Dwight's, you know, whatever his personal foibles are, aren't going to matter on this awesome team anyway. So, I do think like Tim Duncan, one thing I talked about that I think is really underrated about him on the NBA Rank podcast is just that he is really, I think, one of the best ever teammates and leaders. And like, you know, if we needed to sub him out for someone else, like he's not going to bitch the way, you know, maybe someone else would. You know, I think he and Russell are like the two kind of greatest teammates ever. So that's a mark in Duncan's favor. But yeah, I don't know. I think Dwight might actually be a little bit better just for the role that like he would need to play on this team.
Saying that, you know, Dwight Howard would lack motivation in playing the aliens for the survival of our planet, is that some serious, like, that might be the meanest thing anyone's ever said about him. So I
yeah, that's maybe going insinuating a bit more than I actually did. But what about those 90s centers? Like, what about, like, David Robinson? I mean, I think actually of those guys, I mean, Akeem also, like, maybe when he was a little bit younger as well, an awesome defensive player, I think. But just to me, if we're in the modern game, someone that I know could be really successful in what is close to the modern game might outweigh it a little bit. But I think when you look at Akeem, David Robinson, and then even, like, 1967 Wilt, if he had a little bit of time to get acclimated, I still think, him as a physical specimen, if he had grown up today, I'm just not sure whether he would be great in, like, modern day pick and roll defense or, running pick and rolls on offense and getting alley-oops or switching. I'm just not sure how well he would adjust to that the way you would need to. So yeah, that's even 2003 Duncan as well. So that's why I think, that's why I thought Howard was such an inspired pick for
me. I think Robinson probably is a good call there. Does a lot of the same things as Dwight. I think if he, so the issue there is just how long would he have to train? I think that, part of the reason he developed the way he did is he was playing in a game that had greater returns to strength and speed, but he was, when he was never slow, but when he was younger and lighter, he was certainly, one of the most impressive, just, in terms of big men ability to move around the floor that we've ever seen. And so if we got more of that version of David Robinson, than kind of the latter day kind of bulkier version where he could still move, obviously, but it just wasn't quite as optimized for the kind of the basketball we see today.
Yeah. All right. Well, this was an awesome one. We will take it to a part two here. Make sure you check out that Postmates app. Our sponsor, use the CapSpace code to get a free delivery that lets them know that you came from us, keeps them sponsoring the show, and keeps awesome guests like Seth on the air. Seth, where can we follow you on Twitter before we go?
Follow me at Seth Partnow on Twitter and find writing from myself and of the other fine authors at nylancalculus.com.
Yeah, where I have actually used to write and hopefully will someday again, but I kind of like podcasting better than writing, so that's a good reason to still do podcasting. That's irrelevant. Okay, follow me on Twitter at Nate Duncan NBA. We'll talk to you all next time. Stay tuned for part two.